Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
As we stroll along together, holding hands, walking all alone, so in love are we two that we don't know what to do, so in love, in a world our own.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for filmstage.com. And that is the smooth, silky sounds of the times singing so much in love. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Michael Snydell.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. And we also have Bill Graham.
Woo!
We are coming to you on this beautiful Friday afternoon to talk about the new film, The Big Sick, which is starring Kumail Nanjiani and directed by Michael Showalter. It is a romantic comedy that made some noise on the festival circuit and is now playing wide. And so we're going to talk about it. Later this week, we'll be talking about War for the Planet of the Apes? Or War of the Planet of the Apes?
War Apes.
We're going to be talking about War Apes, which is probably the name of the Asylum direct-to-DVD knockoff. Not today. Today we're just going to be talking about The Big Sick. So look forward to that. And that's about it. That's all you need to know, is that's what's happening. So before we get into that, let me remind everyone we can be found on Twitter, at Film Stage Show, Facebook, The Film Stage Show. And, of course, we can be emailed podcast@filmstage.com. And we love getting comments and ratings on iTunes. So if you can take some time out of your busy schedule to do that, we would greatly appreciate it. And, of course, we are brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. Mubi offers you a rotating selection of 30 films. Every day they introduce a new film to their streaming selection, and you have 30 days to watch it before it disappears into the ether. And these are films that you don't just have to stream. You can also download them and watch them on your device, saved in case you have a janky Wi-Fi signal or you're going out into the middle of nowhere, but still want to be able to watch the best foreign and independent films that money can buy. So, all you have to do to get a free 30-day trial of Mubi is go to mubi.com/filmstage, and you, with nothing but your email address, can get a free 30-day trial of Mubi on us. That is Mubi, mubi.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial. We are also on Patreon, as everyone in the Slack channel knows. And I just
I just
want to say one of the best things that I've ever heard about myself got said on the Slack channel yesterday. So if like I don't need, there's no like context that I can give a listening audience who's not
too much.
It's just
you just gotta join. You just gotta join.
I still don't understand it. So
it's. Yeah, you know, join Patreon, get on Slack, and summon the bear. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow, and for as little as $1 a month, you get an access to our special subscribers-only Slack channel where you can talk to all of us.
And apparently Brian's safe word.
Yeah. And of course, you get added in to all of the sweet movie raffles that we have going on. There was an opportunity for people to win a copy of Free Fire on Blu-ray, and so anyone who is already a patron of ours is entered in for that. And we have a bunch of other Blu-rays coming as well, so get in on it. The earlier you get in, the fewer people you have to contend with in order to win these great prizes. That is patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. But that is that. That's all that we have as far as housekeeping is concerned. So now we can dive right on in to our feature review today, which again is The Big Sick, directed by Michael Showalter and starring Kumail Nanjiani and Zoe Kazan.
This was fun.
Wait, we haven't even had sex again yet.
I'm just not that kind of girl. I only have sex once on the first date. I'm just gonna call an Uber.
Your driver will be ready as soon as he puts on his pants.
Is your bed made?
Watch and learn, bye. Oh, crush.
I have to tell you something, bye. I've been dating this girl. She's white.
A white girl?
Okay, you can't look like you and yell white girl.
It's okay. We hate terrorists.
I wonder who that could be.
So this movie is the latest in a thriving subgenre of films, which could very succinctly be called semi-autobiographical stories about comedians in their early career falling in love and having to overcome a very specific problem in order to see that love to its possible conclusion, wherein the comedian in question is played by the comedian himself.
Where it's mostly, that's mostly a TV thing, I'd say, other than Sleepwalk With Me. Can you guys think of any other ones?
No, but I am almost certain that we're in line for like 7 more of them. It is definitely a TV thing.
Sure.
And we got Sleepwalk With Me and now The Big Sick. The Big Sick, which also is a proud member of the growing number
Ultra
of films
Clash.
That just have the words The Big and then some other thing after it.
Yeah,
just like Bad, Big is apparently becoming its own genre of movie title. Now, a lot of that makes it sound like this is some movie that I'm going to shit on and call reductive and like a hoppers on. But I'm going to just spoil my opinion right away. This movie's fucking delightful. So
yay!
I'm glad we get to talk about it. Bill Graham, you seem super stoked. So let's start with you. What are your brief non-spoiler thoughts on The Big Sick?
How do we spoil
is
this?
Is her getting sick a spoiler? Because like
it
sometimes comes off
absolutely
that way.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah,
no, so that's definitely a part of the central kind of
like the plot.
Conceit.
Yeah.
And like what is in a lot of ways makes this film kind of interesting, because a lot of the romance of this film actually happens not off screen, but away from one main character's perspective. So it's kind of like, oh, okay. So... So that's gonna be how that's gonna work. Yeah.
And so this is the true story of Kumail Nanjiani and his wife Emily V. Gordon, who met, had a relationship, sort of broke up, and then she was put into a medically induced coma to deal with an illness that she had.
Yes.
Yes.
No spoilers from there.
Yeah. I won't tell you if she lives. Which
real life conversation
that was had on film Twitter about like, is it a spoiler if like the woman who gets sick in the movie is tweeting about how excited she is for her story to be told?
This is
question.
It's very meta, everything that's going on
is
with this
Dunkirk
film.
Is Dunkirk going to be less exhilarating if you know that the like evacuation at the beaches of Dunkirk was pretty much successful?
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know. But that's history, you know?
That's history.
I didn't actually know that, but thanks.
You didn't?
No. I didn't know that either.
Are you German right now?
Unlike most, but literally everyone I know didn't go through a period where I got insanely into World War II skirmishes and major battles and just random ephemera.
All right. Well, that's going to make...
Yeah, it wasn't covered in Band of Brothers, so that's my knowledge.
If it wasn't covered in the movies Pearl Harbor or the Saving Private Ryan or the miniseries Band of Brothers, most Americans don't know about it. So actually... Yeah, even if you had gotten into World War II, you still might not have known about Dunkirk. So, sorry if I spoiled Dunkirk for anyone. Let's talk about The Big Sick. Bill
You're
going
to get a lot of hate mail.
Harry Styles survived, do you know that?
How else do you think he got into One Direction?
Ah.
He is an ageless vampire, is what I'm saying.
There's a lot of daytime scenes in that movie, by the way. Are we operating from the perspective of Blade, where you know you just wear some sunblock?
Yeah, he's a daywalker.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. No. The walkers there just wore sunblock.
Oh,
there's that famous scene where he's looking at Stephen Dorff and he's like, "Your mascara's running." And I'm like, "Yes,
okay,
yes,
so
I love
sick,
you so
which
much."
Is, which is the theater style.
keep going. It's all right, guys. I got time.
All right. Okay, my thoughts on The Big Sick. As Brian mentioned, this film really is delightful. I will mention ahead of time that I am an Everybody Loves Raymond fan. I caught it towards the tail end. I watched it here and there. I enjoy Ray Romano. And he's good in this film, but really the star, more than Nanjiani, more than why can't I remember her name?
Zoe Kazan.
Zoe Kazan? Or Holly Hunter.
Yes.
I don't know which
Zoe
one
Kazan.
You're gonna say the star is.
No. So. Yeah, sorry. More than Zoe Kazan, who is also delightful in this film, I really think it's Holly Hunter who plays Zoe Kazan's mom that really kind of steals the show. She threatens to just kind of take it over. Her character. I was listening to a podcast earlier today about this film, and what they were mentioning was that this is written by a male and a female. So it's getting both of those perspectives and that aspect. And even when Nanjiani, who like kind of one of the central cruxes of this film, is the relationship he has with his family, specifically his Pakistani background, and how they want arranged marriages, and how he's kind of growing up in this modern world. They moved here to America. They raised him in America, and he's like, why do you want me to have a Pakistani romance? Why do you want me to have a Pakistani, like, you know, life if we moved all the way across the country, across the world to be here? And so that's kind of the central crux of this film in a lot of ways. And it's interesting because of that perspective, having it written by a male and a female, the women that he's kind of met with during the arranged marriages have a very kind of like – the first one's a little bit laughable, but from then on, they're kind of real characters, and they're given a lot of like 3D kind of aspects to them. And I really enjoyed a lot of that aspects. I enjoyed the unique perspective of Nanjiani and kind of his background, and – the relationship there of how a lot of these films are kind of a discovery of what it means to be in a part of this kind of religion, a part of this kind of culture and things like that. And this film does that, but it also takes it from the perspective of kind of a white person in a lot of ways. And, you know, how we don't quite understand what that entails and how much that means to people that have that background. This film is very smartly written. It's very funny. And it's interesting because I mentioned on social media that I actually connected with the parents more than anybody else in this film. I really feel like at the heart, their romance is almost – the biggest kind of aspect of this, both of the parents, in fact. And it's just a really, really well acted, well written, and delightful film. And Holly Hunter really just knocks it out of the park. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
All right, Michael Snydell.
Yeah, I was. I guess we're back to our old. Our old thing. I thought this was just okay.
That's all right.
That's fine.
I mean, there are some things I really like in this. And full disclosure, I was an absolute wreck by the end of this movie because I vastly underestimated how I react to anything that even vaguely has to do with comas lately. Mm-hmm. So this movie made me a wreck, but then I started thinking about it, and I like individual parts a lot more than I like this as a whole movie. I think that there are so just to be more clear, what I mean about there is I feel like there are multiple subgenres here that are grafted together in the sense that you have a culture clash movie, you have kind of a cancer sickness movie in the vein of something like Terms of Endearment. You have a study of a marriage, and then you also have kind of also a younger relationship. And I think that each of those suffers by not getting nearly enough time. And I understand that this wanted to incorporate a number of very different and very laudable perspectives. But I think that each one of these is just kind of thin and feels very programmatic by the end. I want to say, like, actually, I completely agree with Bill. I think Holly Hunter is the absolute best part of this movie. And I think the way that this movie handles marriage and just what relationships look like after a long time is really interesting. And then what I especially like, which you don't see in that many movies, is like an honest discussion of a hospital's abilities and you know, what you should do, you know, when you're told that when you're told by five different doctors, you know, five different diagnoses, and, you know, that they are all working together. But at the same time, you start to wonder, what the fuck do these people know? Like, I think that is very much a perspective that's really interesting. But I don't really think this works as a total movie. I don't think we spend enough time with Zoe Kazan and Kumail Nanjiani. I think that the way that it handles culture clash stuff is at times interesting, but also kind of bad and really easy. But then it comes back at the end and like makes some of that stuff retroactively more interesting. But I just was kind of surprised that this movie is trying to fit in as much as it does. And individual things are really good here, but I kind of doubt I'm going to be thinking about this movie in even a month. I like parts of this. I think people should see it, but I just wish that the last thing I really want to say is I really wish this movie wouldn't always deflect from emotional parts with comedy. At times I really wanted some of these scenes to be engaged with, and I feel like they went for a comedy beat. And this being Michael Showalter and this being Kumail Nanjiani, like, they can sell it, but sometimes I honestly really wanted a more serious movie.
I agree with almost everything you said, but I think I'm still more positive on this movie than you are. I don't know what to say even. So here's the thing. I'm used to Kumail Nanjiani. I've known about him and been aware of his whole thing for a while, from hearing him on different podcasts I listen to and listening to his podcasts, The Indoor Kids and The X-Files Files, and then him being on Silicon Valley. So, A, it's weird to see him playing like a normal person.
X-Files Files is actually with his wife, isn't it?
No, The Indoor Kids is with his wife.
Oh, sorry,
His wife has guested on The X-Files Files. So, like, there's things in this movie where it's almost like, this is going to sound weird, but it's like a friend or a guy I know got a movie made about him. So, like,
okay.
When his phone starts playing the X-Files theme, I'm like, oh, right, because he fucking loves the X-Files. He has a whole podcast about it. Like, of course that's going to be in here. And so that was interesting. It's interesting just for me in that way because I feel like, having listened to their show and heard them interviewing people and talking about the stuff openly for years, it's interesting to see them distill it into a narrative. Much in the same way that having listened to a lot of Mike Birbiglia's comedy first, it was interesting to see that whole deal distilled into a narrative. I like Zoe Kazan, and I think she's great in this movie. I don't think that we needed more time with her. That's not to say that
I don't think so either.
But yeah. I feel like you get, because of the chemistry between these two actors, which must have been weird because she's playing his wife and he's married.
Sure.
She's
definitely on set too.
I would love to like interview her about like that. Like, what is it like to like watch a man reenact your relationship with another woman?
Sure. That's actually one of the things that they did a lot of stuff with Alamo Drafthouse, and they do like a Q&A ahead of the Alamo Drafthouse playing as kind of like pre-roll footage. Mm-hmm. And she definitely mentions like, yeah, that's one of the most awkward spots is like, oh, cool. You're really pretty and you're going to be kissing my husband. Interesting.
Like, again, right. Not like it's not even like a. I was gonna say a Brad Pitt Angelina Jolie thing, but like that's just wrong for all kinds of reasons now. But it's not even like, oh, you know, he's a nuclear physicist and she's the SWAT team captain who like has to help them save the world, and of course they're gonna fall in love. It's like, oh, she has my name, he is still his own name, and they're playing out our relationship. And like to see them not only do that, but to have such a winning and like good chemistry, I feel like that must send you on an emotional and existential like odyssey within yourself.
Sure.
But you definitely have enough of her to feel what they're feeling and understand how well they fit together. And then for everything to go wrong, the first time it goes wrong, which is just when they get in a fight about him and his parents, was, you know, kind of heartbreaking. And then for her to slip into this, you know, state of sickness that requires a medically induced coma, was even harder. So like there's a lot in this movie that's very good. I think that it lands. I think that for the first three quarters of this movie, its pacing is very good. Mm-hmm. It has that problem, and this is an Apatow produced film, where like like Michael was saying, it doesn't just bite off more than it can chew, but it also tries to take a bite of four different things at once. And
yeah,
at a certain point you start realizing like, oh, but these other plots aren't done yet. And
yeah, becomes, no, they are.
That becomes an issue, because like you could just leave it where it is, but now we have to have like 7 to 8 other scenes of him like wrapping up stuff. And I understand like you don't want to have a movie that's like emotionally honest like this one and cues, you know, cinematically close to reality, and then just have it wrap up with like a talent show somewhere where everything gets magically solved. But
sure,
at the same time, like there's a reason that we go to the movies, and part of that is it streamlines things. We avoid books and documentaries because those things can't do that. And so to see this one kind of really stick with like, well, that one problem is all taken care of, but we've still got to deal with the family stuff and his career and his one man show and his friends and all this other stuff was a little crazy. And then that's not even including the side plot with Emily's parents. And there's just a lot. There's a lot happening at the end of this movie that kind of like bogs down what could have been a much cleaner ending.
Sure.
But in general, and I'll even agree with the fact that like sometimes I wanted to lean more into the emotional. There were many points in the film where I was like, it would be great if he like burst into tears right now. Like,
sure.
And I know they're building up to that moment, and I know that they're kind of doing the Arrested Development-ish man-child thing to a point. You know,
sure.
You can almost feel the montage of him cleaning up his apartment coming.
Yeah. And the roommates, like, it's just some of those... I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, I agree with a lot of what you said, but none of that is offensively bad. None of it's poorly done, and... in general, the movie is very winning, and I think that a lot of that has to do with Kumail Nanjiani's performance. A person who, because I have heard his name, said on a podcast by him and many other people, I'm not having any trouble with.
Yeah, I was going to mention that at the top of the podcast, that pretty much everybody across the board that I've heard mention his name has done a really good job with his name, considering it is on paper... you just look at it and you're like, whoa, boy.
Yeah. But like I said, like, you know, so if every actor who has a name that is more difficult to say than Joe White could just have a podcast that I could listen to where you just say your name over and over and over again, I would never have to struggle with Saoirse Ronan's name ever again.
Oh, jeez.
So this goes Saoirse. Double.
Saoirse.
Saoirse?
Yeah.
Not Skorsky?
Saoirse, like inertia.
Oh, no.
Saoirse, like inertia.
Saoirse. All right, well, she's not even in this movie, so what does it matter?
No.
I'm even having trouble with Zoe Kazan, because I don't know if it's Kazan.
I don't know. Yeah,
Kazan.
Yeah.
It's Kazan?
It's Leah Kazan.
Okay, but Ray Romano and Holly Hunter
Good, damn it.
Now, the other thing is, I was worried about this movie because I saw the trailers and I'd heard how good it was, but the trailers never really did anything for me. And I think because the trailers lean on the easiest comedy bits that this movie does,
sure.
The comedy bits that I feel like they could have cut out, having to tell a white family that you're not terrorists because your bearded brother said white woman too loud in a restaurant. The part where the first arranged marriage appointment that we see does that super awkward and too loud the truth is out there thing.
Yeah.
There's so much better stuff in this that I'm kind of sad that A, they left that in, and B, it was the crux of the marketing campaign.
I do like that they kind of leaned on the Uber part, though, that he's an Uber driver, and then that becomes a really kind of interesting and kind of cute relationship builder between them. And then also all of the people that he interacts with in a lot of ways is, he doubles up as this person that you meet and you talk to, and then you're like, man, I need to go somewhere. And he's like, I can drive you. Just like, oh, okay. This is weird.
Yeah. And
his last film too had kind of a less than desirable trailer too. Hello, My Name is Doris. Which was a little more interesting than it looked. Sorry. No, Michael Showalter's.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I think, it's not the fault of the movie that the trailer decided to use those.
No.
But it did give me this kind of queasy feeling going in. Is this going to be, for a movie about the immigrant experience and falling in love with someone outside of your culture, is this going to be weirdly racist?
If it didn't have Kumail and it didn't have some of these people kind of associate with it, and it didn't have kind of this large amount of praise, this would definitely be one of those films that I would just be like, yeah, hard pass. I'm gonna skip that.
Wait for HBO.
Instead
it actually, I like, unfortunately my wife was not able to accompany me to the theater.
Same.
But this is I see this.
You have a wife?
Really? Me?
No, Michael.
My partner, then. How about that?
Girlfriend?
Yeah.
What do you call each other? Do you call each other partner?
Girlfriend. No. Okay. All right. Continue.
Bill's got a girlfriend now.
Congratulations.
Shout out to Bill. Everyone, every single person on this podcast is now in a relationship of some kind.
That's scary.
I know. How have we three all found love? I just don't know. What was I going to say?
Moving right along.
I literally can't remember. There's this weird thing where sometimes you'll feel a person who is writing about their experience just push back way too hard against it, and I think between The Big Sick and Master of None we've seen some really great nuanced insights into what that is like. Sure. and the pain and the trouble that go along with it.
This would definitely evoke the dating episode from the most recent season.
Yes.
Numerous times.
Yes, it did.
I do want to mention one thing real quick.
Mm-hmm.
One of the criticisms that's kind of been lobbed at this film, which is interesting because it kind of comes at from the same angle that some people are criticizing Master of None, is there's this idea or this kind of common thread that keeps popping up in, I guess, pop culture in a lot of ways, and in reality as well, of the brown man dating or going after the white woman. It's one of those things, and I think it was smartly pointed out, very easily, this is reality. So they get a pass. Master of None kind of gets, a little bit of a, okay, well, that's a criticism.
I don't think that is a criticism, though. I wanted to bring this up later, but we can totally bring it up.
Can I?
I'll just give context. Whoa. Specifically, Jezebel, not a person named Jezebel, but the website Jezebel, published an article written by Aditi Natasha Keeney.
Only Jezebel.
What was that?
There's multiple articles. It's not only Jezebel.
Okay, but like the one that I saw the most fire about was the one on Jezebel that was, I'm tired of watching, it literally is titled, I'm tired of watching brown men fall in love with white women on screen. But like, with Master of None, like, he dates women of every color. Like, and that is, I assume, true to his experience and the experience of living in New York. And it doesn't seem like Netflix is gonna tell him, like, you need to fall in love with a white woman. Like, it's this is one of the reasons why racial and identity politics are somewhat intellectually beyond my ken. Just because I don't know what the right answer is ever. Because there was a lot of, like, 10 years ago, there was an article somewhere I read that was like, have you ever noticed that Denzel Washington never falls in love with a white woman? It was always...
You mean a black woman?
No, a white woman. He's like he was in a movie with Julia Roberts, and in the book, there was a romance, and he said, I don't think we should have a romance in this. But, like, and then Will Smith even, like, has trouble getting a white woman...
Focus.
As his romantic partner. Focus finally did it, but that was like a year ago, 2 years ago,
and that took the power of
Focus.
That took the power of the actress as well, because I mean, she was such a bright spot and such a kind of a burning star that they paired him with someone that you would
like 10 years before whenever Focus was made, you would not see the world's like hottest in both like popularity and possibly box office star, like, who's a white woman getting paired with the hottest like black actor. It just wouldn't happen. And so now we have kind of moved past that in a way, and we have more interracial relationships happening, which to me seems like progress and a good thing.
Yeah.
And then you see people writing about this, and it's a bad thing. And I don't get it. And someone like this is one I wouldn't have even brought it up if it weren't such a big
Brian
thing.
Let me put it in another context for a second. Okay, so I mean, I think it's really dangerous to immediately start saying that we don't understand the people who have the problem with this, and I'm looking at it in this way. So I had this thought certainly while watching Big Sick, that when you think of Western comedies, or even when you think of Western comedies, the ones that become big enough to be conversation points are things like this. There aren't movies about that are on a grand scale with other big actors where a romance is at the center with brown men, with people of color dating other people of color. They absolutely exist. I am not in any way saying that, but they are not talked about on a scale the way this one is. So when something like this comes out and it does become a big breakout hit and it stars someone like Camille Nanjiani or Master of None, which might be, like, honestly, I'm not saying that people who watch Master of None aren't also watching other things involving, Indian actors, whether it is legitimately Bollywood or Indian Americans or anything like that. But the fact of the matter is that Big Sick is something that is like out there and in the public eye, and they're saying, oh yes, we have Camille Nanjiani like in the front and in something that is a big talking point, and it is with a white woman. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. That doesn't mean that conversation doesn't exist. And of course, interracial relationships are progressive, and it's great that we have this conversation on screen. But I was trying to think, and I'm like, there is nothing on this level that so many eyes are going to see that would actually take those traditions seriously without it being a joke or without it being something very culturally specific that a smaller niche audience is seeing.
But does that give you the right to use this movie as
a as a cudgel? Not at all.
As like the standing post for your straw man. Like
no, but that's
where,
still
that's where like the problem for me comes is that we live in a take culture. You got to have a hot take. You got to have a take. Something has to be problematic. And like you take a genuinely moving, funny, good-hearted film, and then
that's based on a true story.
Yeah, that's based on a true story, and then you make that the header image and the primary source of your ire in an article like this. Like,
but that article, if we're talking about the same one, she likes the movie. She talks about what she likes in the movie, but she wants to talk about this. We are not in any place to dismiss that she has problems with it and confusing feelings about that. Like, I understand what you're saying about takes. Yes, takes are fucking exhausting. But, like, that is no reason for us to also dismiss her perspective, which is reasonable as long as you don't put it into a take context. Like, she should be able to talk about that. And, like, right, now I'm fucking, man, context. I'm white-splaining right now, but, like...
I don't think you're white-splaining, because you're not... Like, well, first of all, I don't even know... Like, we're not telling her what racism is. My one pure point is that, like, I understand... And yeah, we haven't had a mainstream hit comedy that involved two Pakistani people falling in love. Or
Pakistani, any...
I was just about to start naming off other cultures.
All right, sure.
Yes, like, any one of that. Like, and that's true, but we, well, like, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have had a movie like this. So, like, the progress is happening, and to... Especially with that headline, and I don't know if she chose the headline, but, like, it's just... It's fucked up. Like, that's, I can't not see it that way. Like, to me, it is only, I see people enjoying this and talking about how it's good. Let me stomp all over it. And that's not to say that the boots you're wearing while stomping on it aren't legitimate boots to use to stomp it. But, like, why this one? Why not just write an essay? Because
this is the one.
But this is not the problem. This movie is not the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, then what movie is the problem?
Sure.
Right? And
when will the conversation be had?
But
then?
That's the thing. Well, if you can't find a movie that's the problem, then don't write about it in the context of any of those movies. Like,
Hold on.
I wish I could see a movie that reflected the immigrant experience of two people trying to find love within their own culture in America.
Nobody's going to fucking read that article.
I'm tired of seeing brown men fall in love with white women on screen, especially if that brown man actually fell in love with a white woman in real life.
Yeah, but nobody's going to read that article, Brian.
That, like, is the, like, fault of the culture. Like, don't
debase yourself
in your opinion in order to get clicks.
That's our culture, man. That's our culture, and that's how we write, and that's how we have headline news and all of this stuff. That is literally our culture. It is a clickbait culture, and it sucks because there are a lot of interesting and smart takes that have to be hidden behind janky titles like that and things like that that have to be worded in a way that is gonna kind of get your gall going. Like I mean, you obviously are basing a lot of your ire kind of almost exclusively a lot of your ire based on that title alone, which means, Brian, it worked. And that's the thing that sucks. That's the thing that sucks is that title got you to click that article and be like, this is bullshit. I hate this title or this article's title. I wish it had a better article title or had a little bit less ire for this particular film. But that's kind of the issue. And the other issue is, I understand why you're saying why this film, because this film's good and this film's enjoyable. And even in that article, she kind of points out how she enjoyed it and how she liked it. The issue here is, if you attack a film that is shitty, nobody has seen it. Nobody knows what the hell you're talking about. So this is a good... So this is kind of a good opportunity, because now this is kind of a cultural conversation. And I understand where a lot of these – look, you know, the female perspective, especially in film, is very marginalized. And can you imagine being a female of a color, right? Super marginalized at that point. So, mm-hmm. you know, these kind of takes are going to be much more common as we continue to push forward. I think it's good. I think it kind of sucks that the takes kind of have to happen, but the takes are happening while progress is being made. But that's kind of a sign
being made because of this take. Like, do you think that no. doing anything? What is it?
Brian, but you are actively dismissing it. Like, that's the thing. Like, Bill and I are both saying we understand that when it's this movie and when it happens in this culture that we exist in, where it has to exist with the news peg, like, yes, it's frustrating, but like, we are actively dismissing it by pretending that just because of that context, it doesn't matter. And there is something legitimate to be said about the fact that, like, in Master of None and this, we don't get a character who gets even enough time to be remotely on the same level as anyone. Like,
I disagree. I disagree because
can I get clarification on what Michael means by a character who's on the same level as anyone?
Sure. Yeah, that was terrible wording. I don't think that there is a person of color in here.
Female.
I would say person of color in general, who is not become – transcend being – part of the butt of the joke.
I would disagree.
Besides the main character.
His mom.
Okay.
The woman that he speaks to outside of his house. Or outside of her house, I should say.
Yes, her.
Yes, but that scene is used entirely as a way to talk about his own journey of being in love with someone else and his conflict with tradition. Like, it is not about that woman.
It's a device
in that scene. Like, yes, she is a great actress. I would love to see her in more things. But that is entirely a device. Like,
I don't agree with
you,
that.
Michael, you focus a lot on the mechanics of kind of the plot machination of films like this and things like that. And so you're seeing it kind of in a kind of computer, kind of like zeros and ones. And I'm just seeing
robot, Michael.
Yes. I'm seeing this more as I think there's something genuine there that they're actually exploring while she's talking. And we have to get into, I guess, spoilers in a way to kind of. Yeah, to talk about that more, because I found her character fascinating. I loved her kind of character's journey in this film in particular, because we don't get that perspective and we don't see her kind of reality in a lot of ways. And I loved it. I really did.
Well, that's they in a very limited amount of time, granted, they set up a lot about her, and she
and
it shows like how difficult it is for both of them to have to try to work within this system that has been created. And you know, he's a dick for not telling these people that he has no serious interest in them, but then like when he does try to do that, he's still a dick. Like, allowing himself to be even a passive participant who either has to do nothing or do something, just like, that's a problem. And like, unfortunately, there are people in your life who function as a pivot point where you realize how your behavior is. And so, yeah, like every once in a while in a movie like this, someone's going to get used that way. Like I said, if this movie were nothing but the first girl brought to the dinner table, like with an accent, saying something ridiculous and being like too overly like happy, I guess is the
sure
way
enthusiastic.
Like, I would agree, but like they do, I think, do the work to make these people appear to be more than who they are.
I agree.
And like, yeah, it's his story, and so literally everyone is a pivot point for him. Like, parents are a pivot point. Who have their own thing, but like, if he had never come into their lives, I feel as though their lives would be exactly the same. Like, it just doesn't, like, I just don't, it's a movie. Like, you have to make every character have a reason to be there, and that's usually to affect the plot in some way. Like, Bo Burnham's character in this is way more underserved than most of the women who he meets.
He's obnoxious.
At his dinner table.
Yes.
No, I will agree with that. And that's the thing. You guys are talking about computer. Like, I used the word programmatic for a reason earlier. Like, I guessed every fucking beat in a way that really bothered me. Like,
And I did too, but I guess it didn't bother me because the way that they did it, you know, working within that very clear-cut romantic comedy pattern, you know, they used good fabric. Because apparently I'm trying to do clothing metaphors now, too. Like, I've done food metaphors. I've done clothing metaphors.
Yes, yes, we've all seen T-shirts. Yeah. This is a good T-shirt.
This is a made, damn good made T-shirt with, quality, with an interesting pattern.
Made with quality fabric.
Yeah. The stitching is real good. But, like, I just, like, and this is a problem that I've had with a lot of things. Like, like you said, Michael, there has to be a news peg. Like, I couldn't pitch an idea about, like, a movie or a subgenre of movies unless, like, that movie was coming out.
Sure.
Like, because people just don't want to read about it. So, like, if I wanted to do something about, like, anti-war films, like, I don't know, like, in the middle of March.
Sure.
Someone would have said, well, you should have pitched this 3 months ago when Hacksaw Ridge was getting Oscar play, or you're gonna have to wait 4 months,
6 months, yeah,
Dunkirk comes out. Which, sure, is just like, okay, but, like, I have the idea now, and it's an evergreen idea. Like, I don't, sure, need to, but now I'm gonna have to rework the first four paragraphs to be like, Dunkirk, yep, is coming into theaters,
yeah,
it's all about blah blah blah, and now let me talk about the thing I actually want to talk about. But, like,
there's a reason I have a graveyard of drafts on my computer.
You just you got to have, like, a Google alert set up for each one. When is the next zombie movie coming out? And then I can talk about anti-vaxxers.
Wait, can I say something that, like, undermines my own point real quick?
I'm going to say this. You do that.
Yeah, I know you do. I really know you do.
We're taking notes.
This is as much like me being mad at myself that I'm realizing, like, I just don't watch these stories enough as something not being a subversion of him being a culture clash. Like, it is still a rarity when I see, you know, a story that, like, genuinely treats, like, being a Muslim. And that is my fault. Like, I am not in any way saying that is the movie's fault. But just the fact that this wanted to cram this in here for some reason just rubbed me really the wrong way. So maybe that's as much, you know, me
and it's what's self-flagellating, like,
as anything else.
You say it's crammed in there, but it's very much, like, integral to the movie. But I know what you mean, because the movie's also trying to do so many other things that it's hard to, like, sure, see that at first. Like, to me, in my mind, like, they should have, like, I mean, you got to have the parents in there because that's a big part of it. But, like, it should be he should be viewing their relationship through the lens of his parents' relationship and maybe set up more parallels in that way. Because, yeah, like, if his should we get into spoilers?
Yes.
Yes. Because, yes, I'm going to say something that I guess
we're all over.
Yeah. All right. So spoilers start now if you want to hear the rest of my point. So, like, if you have his parents who are in love and seem to be doing very well and have always been, sure, faithful, and then if you set up, like, oh, you know, her parents found love in the same way that he and Emily did, but Ray Romano cheated on Holly Hunter, like, mm-hmm, that's an interesting twist, because it's like, well, I've had this vision of romantic love being the be-all end-all, but,
sure,
like, you know, obviously both marriages are strong, but one of them has had to deal with betrayal and the other one has just been fine. But that's not where the movie goes. Like, the movie keeps them very much, no, separated from each other, which I think isn't to the detriment of the movie, but the movie, if it had gone that way, might have been elevated more.
Mm-hmm.
And it is interesting to kind of put that into perspective, because the arranged marriage, something that a lot of these kind of films and particularly Kumail in this particular perspective is kind of pushing against as kind of like this anti-romance thing, they seem to have a very solid, interesting romantic relationship, whereas Ray Romano has cheated on Holly Hunter for God knows what fucking reason, you know? And
he
it's just like,
no, he's like, yeah, he's lost to describe it.
Yeah.
I mean,
and so it is kind of interesting in that it does kind of flip that script of like, hey, you know, you think that this would be one of those situations where they might even kind of like delve into it and kind of talk on it, but they really kind of don't. It's all kind of surface stuff, and then they're just kind of on to the next thing.
I'll put it this way. I think that New Girl, the sitcom that stars
Zooey Deschanel.
I'm still watching that for some reason.
I mean, I love that show. I am still unemployed, and so I have had plenty of time to rewatch the entirety of New Girl.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And I have to have something on in the background while I'm like doing all the things around the house.
Yeah. I know, I understand.
And Cora, my lovely daughter, can't understand most language yet, but she definitely knows like violence and loud noises.
So New Girl, when they're
making like tart jokes, goes over her head. But if I was watching The Wire and she saw someone get gunned down, she'd probably have a better idea of what that is. Anyway, so but like the culture clash between Schmidt and Cece and their respective families and cultures is better dug into than the culture clash really is in this film.
Like, yeah, but I mean that's not fair, because that's a fucking show and it's got plenty of time to
like,
kind of develop
it's even
that.
Like within a single episode, like
they don't need to set up and establish the characters in a single episode, so they can just go ahead and go right into some of that stuff.
Right,
there's a lot of setup and execution that.
But
yeah,
this movie doesn't
ahead.
Even like really attempt that, which is something we've talked about. Is that like. For as much as, I mean, the IMDb summary is a couple deals with their cultural differences as their relationship grows.
Sure.
Which, first of all, is a hilariously vague, not at all representative plot description. But like,
I mean, neither is the poster.
No. The poster doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The poster honestly looks like a zombie movie.
Oh my God. Yes, it does. Wait, I want that movie.
You can keep the title too. But what I was going to say is like their cultural differences don't really crop up until it comes down to like, are we going to be together forever or not?
Sure.
Whereas like if he, and I think I've seen this take out there, and this to me is an even more interesting take that I've been thinking about for a while. Not just in relation to Muslims, but in relation to like every single person who has any kind of faith, up to and including Christianity, is that we usually like our protagonists most when they don't have religion.
Hmm.
So like, he's a Muslim, but he's not like stopping one of their dates to go pray. And he's not telling her that like he can't try her famous pulled pork because he can't eat pork. Like,
sure.
There is the cultural differences between them are really just in his interaction with his more faith-based family.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's a thing that happens a lot, is that and I don't know if it's a reflection of like how a lot of younger people now don't have religion.
Sure. Sure.
So like that's true. Like when a person leaves that kind of place and then comes to America, which is a very secular society, it becomes easier to not do that. You're not near your family as much. You know, we as a culture don't expect generations to live in the same house or the same town or even the same state. I mean, I've got family in New York, Texas, Georgia, and New Jersey, and probably other places that I don't even know about. But like, if I suddenly became Jewish, my parents would never know. And so that's the thing that we can do here. And it seems like all of these movies, that's and TV shows, because this has been a thing on Master of None as well, is like that was like last season and this season, is like dealing with that concept of your agnostic or atheistic child who is rejecting all of these things that are very important to you. And it's true to life, I guess, in this movie that he wasn't really that into religion.
But I think there's something you can extrapolate there to of what is in here but is missing. In general, like, without changing the story, like, it's not only how religion affects him, but it's just that we don't even acknowledge what that actually means to his family other than how it affects Kumail. And that's what I think is kind of missing here, is that, like, I did generally want more of why his mom and dad, like, feel so strongly about this, you know, not just – like, I don't want them to go and do a long expeditionary, you know, rant like his one-man show or anything. Yeah. It's just – there is something more pure that's pure, like, given that's missing in those conversations with his family.
Yeah, but I mean, I have to push back against that because a little bit, because I have to say, you know, if you've dealt with religion in your own kind of family, mm-hmm. I think there's a really relatable way that kind of all of these religions in a lot of way put a lot of pressure on the younger generation to follow through and, mm-hmm. you know, marry within side of the religion, marry within side of the culture, things of this nature. You know, I don't necessarily need them to explain to him why it's important to them.
Sure.
Because like it's all around them, it would be a weird kind of expositionary dump in a lot of ways. Now, maybe he could have
that's
have
what
that
I said. I don't want.
Yeah, I know.
You could still have that conversation, which I think is what you're going to say, Bill.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a shorthand.
You can maybe have that conversation with your brother. You can maybe have that conversation with Emily in this kind of context, but
that's kind of the issue. Is like a perfect exposition delivery system.
Yes, like, but that's the issue. That's kind of the crux of this issue in this film is Nanjiani in a lot of ways, and I really feel bad for him. And that's the scary thing about it is he honestly doesn't know what's going to happen if he comes out and tells them that he's in love with not only just like a white woman, but a woman of any other religion or any other culture, they would similarly reject him in a lot of ways. And that's his fear. And it's hard to explore that mm-hmm. without uncovering that fear, because he just doesn't even want to have that conversation. And I can definitely understand why he wouldn't want to have that conversation, because as soon as you open up that conversation box,
sure.
then all of a sudden they're going to be interested in what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, what you're doing when you're not around them, because mm-hmm. they're going to be fearful that all of a sudden, you know, and all of a sudden it becomes a very personal intrusion point. Mm-hmm. It's a tough thing to kind of get around in a lot of ways without having that conversation. And the only way that we can have that conversation in a lot of ways is if Emily has that conversation with Kumail. And obviously that is kind of the crux of this entire film, is that conversation leads to their breakup, leads to her very quickly and shortly thereafter. They can't recover, right? They can't recover. And so all of a sudden mm-hmm. she ends up sick and she ends up in the hospital. And that's kind of the kind of turn point of this film. So they can't have that conversation until maybe later, I guess, in a lot of ways.
I think I wish that like they had taken time in this film to like let the parents explicate their point of view more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do think mm-hmm. he asks a salient question, which is, why would you move me out of there?
Yeah.
You still want me to act like I'm there. And I don't feel as though they give a good reason. And I am almost certain that in their hearts they have a good reason. But like, a lot of the conversations that happen in this movie that are like that all happen in a moment of anger. And then she finds his box of this, that, wow, I almost said box of Pakistani women. His box of photographs of the different women that he's been mm-hmm. made to meet. And then it's a fight. And then she leaves, and then she gets sick, and so they don't have a chance to really talk about it. And then his parents come over, and then, again, it's a fight. Like, no one has a conversation.
Yep.
There's never, like, a cool-down period where they kind of, like, come back and try to, like, reconcile or talk through things in a more measured way.
The only people that actually have that is Holly Hunter, Ray Romano, and then Kumail with them. So that's the kind of exploratory kind of, oh, you're the guy that just broke up with her, broke her heart. And Holly Hunter obviously is like, no, get the hell out of here.
But he never really talks to them about, like,
that's true.
Why? Like, I kept expecting more of that, which is, again, like, I was a little disappointed, but like the movie itself doesn't suffer because of that. But I think that it could have done more with it. Which is a weird thing to say. Like,
I was kind of surprised they were so with him by the end. Like, I understand he was there for the whole thing, but the fact that they were so positive about him when the one thing wasn't even discussed, like, really felt very dishonest to me in a movie that seemed so in trust and emotional honesty.
Yeah, I kept kind of like, Michael and I have talked about how predictable this movie is. But the one thing that it kept throwing me on was I was definitely like, oh, this is the moment where they're going to have the conversation. And it never happened.
Sure.
Which is annoying. And I wish that it had. I wish that they had taken the time to do that. But I think that one of the things, like I was talking about, when you have an immigrant story or any kind of story of someone turning against like their culture, it sucks to say this, but like, the quintessential American, as we kind of think of them, is someone who is like sort of self-interested and very lacking in a sense of like strong cultural or religious tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see those as bad things. So you take enough of that away from a person and they become a relatable character, but with nothing to challenge you or your conception of them. So if, and again, it's based on a true story, so how much can we really want from it? This is. But like, I think that it would be interesting to see a film like this, or like Master of None, which is far less autobiographical, if even at all anymore, and have that person want some of that tradition. Like, have that person hold on to those things and really like deal with them. You know, like, what do you do if you're a Muslim who's dating a Christian and you're in love, but like, you know, she can't eat meat on Fridays during Lent, and like, you can never have pork, and it becomes a thing where it's like, you know, oh, well, you can't have pork, but I can still make bacon for breakfast. And then at some point it becomes like, okay, could you like stop doing that though? Like, can you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. I've experienced that a little bit with a vegetarian girlfriend, in terms of like, there were some things where I realized like, you know, meat is going to be in a lot of things I eat, but you know, if it's a, you know, a fucking lobster or, you know, something where it's a little more like, that is something entirely different.
Or like one of those things where like, you know, when you're at home alone, you can joke and like, you know, your vegetarian girlfriend is like, I'm going to have a salad. And you're like, I'm going to have a hamburger and I'm going to say moo every time I bite it. Like, that's fine. But
yeah,
like,
I'm going to have a hamburger of just the hamburger.
It's going to be a burger and the bun is going to be two other burgers.
Yes.
And I'm going to cover it in chili and half a hot dog and bacon. Like, but then if you were to go, if she's like, there's a new vegan restaurant I want to go try, and if you were there and making those same jokes and bitching about how they don't have meat, that's like not cool. Like, there's subtle, that's like culture clash. Those are the subtle differences that you either work through or erode, because the bigger conversations are easy to have. Like, my wife and I, she's not Catholic. I am Catholic. So when we were talking before we were even pregnant about, you know, our future and children, I just like, I ripped those fucking band-aids off. I was like, if we have a baby, I'm going to want him or her to be baptized Catholic. Uh-huh. Full stop. Like, that's just how it's going to be. And she's like, oh, okay, that's fine. I'm like, oh, all right, well, great. But like,
that was easy.
The smaller things are where the trouble starts, because you can let them slide up until the point that you can't let them slide anymore. And it's really difficult to bring up something tiny with someone you love, mm-hmm. because it's like, you may not understand why this is a big deal to me, but I swear to Christ it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, those are kind of the tough conversations to have. And those are the tough things to explain why, because it's just something like super ingrained inside of you. And a lot of those things are not things that you're ever going to be swayed away from. You know, it's like, no, this is just how I view the world. Like, yeah. this is definitely something inside of me. It's not like a big overarching idea that we can have like this long, like sure. kind of conversation about. No, this is very, very personal. And that's it. You know,
I think the closest this film gets to this is the conversation about when Zoe Kazan's character has to go to the bathroom at 2 a.m., which is something that you do with if you live with someone.
Yes.
You realize yes. that people go to the bathroom. But like, it's kind of interesting. Like, I think that's a really good scene, but there's not really a lot of that stuff transfers between you. And they kind of like that is one thing that's a little bit weird how this is structured, because they kind of relegate that, like, you know, that honeymoon getting to know each other period to about 2 minutes. It's like a montage of, like, you know, them being comfortable and, like, you know,
it's,
you know, just
like
horsing around
in this movie. Yeah,
sure.
And and like I'll say it again, like, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie especially once I realized that it was a lot lighter than the premise would make you think it was.
Like, the trailer. Even the premise. Yeah,
he's,
sure.
He's not even a first generation immigrant. He was born in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So like, he is generation zero for this family, you know, starting to lay their roots in America. And like, she is a cute, quirky white girl whose parents are from North Carolina. Like, that's a culture clash, but like, they are so not caring about any of that up until the point that, like, the concept of their sure. future and his arranged marriage is brought up, that it doesn't really ever strike. And then when her parents show up, aside from like one awkward interaction over the cafeteria table, that doesn't really become a thing either. So it's like, I walked in.
I kind of thought that stuff was kind of badly written, too, to be honest. When he first meets Holly Hunter and Ray Romano in the hospital room, like, that stuff's like, okay, I guess you don't know how to act like a human being, even though you've been. And I understand he's never met them and it's awkward, but that whole thing just like reeked to me of like indie dramedy.
And that's what, like, I was saying when I was like, there should be a point where he just like breaks down and is like, he stops with the jokes. You know, and that's the stuff that's in the trailer, unfortunately, is all the times when he should act like a human, but instead makes a joke.
I just want to say one other devil's advocate thing, too, is that, like, devil's advocate, even towards my own point, is like, I guess he doesn't really owe us a conversation about, you know, giving fair shrift to his parents' beliefs or something.
No, he doesn't.
Like, I guess I'd say, like, this movie respects his parents and, you know, his parents as people, but doesn't respect what they believe or even like acknowledge it as even as like a possibility as something.
And that's why I was saying, like, I'm not going to write a take about it. I'm not going to really like inveigh against this film because of it. Like, I still give this film like a solid B+ because I was thoroughly entertained. And, you know, final 15 minutes of like wrapping up shit aside, it's a very good movie that I enjoyed. But like, I do wish that there had been a little more there, the movie that we're given is solid pretty much the whole way through, with a couple clunker lines and moments, but like, on the whole, is so charming and winning that like, I didn't really care about that. Because taking the place of all those bigger conversations that I would have liked to have heard was enough winning exchanges and performances.
And I sound like I'm hating on this movie. I'm not trying to. It's more that, I mean, it doesn't like shit the bed at the end. Like, I was kind of expecting for like a scene towards the end where he like almost cheated or something. And I'm really glad they don't do that.
I was expecting
the cleanness that exactly is what you're talking about that bothered me so much, Brian.
I was expecting everyone to come to his one-man show and for them to all suddenly gain perfect understanding of him through his newly revamped one-man show.
I like that she came after. That was a nice touch.
I do like that. There's touches like that that I really like, because I saw him start to do the one-man show, and it actually reminded me of Spider-Man Homecoming, because one positive thing that I didn't say about Spider-Man Homecoming is I love that they show like a montage of his team at the decathlon, like the academic decathlon, without him, and they don't struggle at all, and they still win.
It's nice.
So it's like he's not there, but they're like, oh, well, we still got this. And then like, so that doesn't have to be a thing. Like, you weren't here. We lost. You're the only one who knew about like non-Newtonian physics. Like, why weren't you here, Peter? Instead, they're just like, yeah, we fucking won.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how this movie was, where it's like, okay, she missed his one man show, but it's obvious that he's got more of his sense of himself down now. And this is just another thing that she didn't have to be there for.
Were you guys kind of surprised that she takes him back at the end, too? I mean, not as quickly as she does.
I don't know how quick it was.
Yeah, and that's the conversation that we don't know. I think it is really nice that we see the romantic kind of comedy cliche gesture of him bringing her that box of all those weird trinkets and shit like that. And him just being like, hey, this is what I was doing while you were in a coma. And she's just like,
bag of
depression.
And it's like, I was in a coma.
She's just like, this means absolutely nothing to me. I don't know if you realize this right now, but I'm still kind of sick. Like I'm not over this yet. And we still, in my mind, have just recently broken up. This is like you didn't fast forward through this.
Yeah, there's never you a point like in the hospital either before or after the coma when she's like happy to see him. Like,
yeah, and I like
him that. Don't change, because she is literally just not there for all of it.
Yeah, and I like that aspect, and I like that. I think it's interesting because while this film in a lot of ways kind of treads on a lot of things that doesn't dig into it all that much, I think it does enough to inspire a lot of conversation like we've already had to this point. And something that Michael brought up that I think is definitely a huge crux of this film that they touch on smartly and then kind of it fades away in a lot of ways is kind of the hospital aspect of it, and how he has that conversation with the nurse that kind of touches on insurance and touches on liability and touches on, why would a hospital, against the better idea of science and kind of, you know, the medical profession, say, you can move this patient who's currently in a coma. Like, that seems like a terrible idea, but also, they would probably relinquish control in a lot of ways, because the higher ups, the people that are actual doctors there, don't necessarily always have the final say on what happens to their patients. If someone who has control
can, and the nurses are doing what they can, and then like somewhere above that are the administrators who are like, this woman who we can't fix and who's probably going to die wants to go to a different hospital? Fucking thank God. Like, get her out of here.
I don't need that.
Like, there's that line about how they're in the doctor's office and she's like, well, the other doctor said that this would work for sure.
Yeah, because you've got like the 400 different doctors that are like, oh, well, I specialize in the blood. I'm a phlebotomist. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And then you've got like the oncologists and everyone and everything else and neurologists and whatever. And they're, you know, they're all coming at it from their direction, but like no one's coming to the same conclusion.
It's tough. It's tough because, you know, I think this film does touch on a lot of interesting things. And
this is a better hospital movie than it is almost anything else. Like,
in a lot of ways.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. It really nails down that whole like, all right, so I guess we're just here now. Like, this is our job. And then we go home. And then tomorrow we're going to come back to our job. And we're just going to keep getting up into and including if you want to know what the fuck is going on, you ask the nurse.
I think there's roots for a pretty good marriage movie in here.
What was that?
I think there's roots for a pretty good marriage movie in here between Holly Hunter and Ray Romano.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be interesting if they did a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern style thing and just like took this entire movie from their perspective.
Yeah, they could take – that's one of the things I like about this movie is as much as, you know, some of these characters are kind of shortly written, I want to follow that – I don't even know if she is Pakistani. I imagine she is, but I want to follow that Pakistani woman's like future and her life and kind of get her story and her perspective because A, she is beautiful and B, she has a really nice house. And I don't understand. I don't know.
Like, I don't know.
Maybe. But maybe. I was like, well, no. She was with her parents. Early. Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he is not dropping her off at her parents' house. Her parents would have taken her back, right? Maybe. So,
unless they wanted to give them time together. I didn't know. Yeah. Yeah, like, that's a nice house.
Yeah. And then, I'm just like, what is going on with her? Like she's kind of quirky and she's got, like, this. Like, she's into magic, and I'm like,
I was about to say, she's the one who did, like, the magic trick, too.
Yeah, I'm like, that's...
I'm a married man, but I'd marry that woman.
Yeah, like, that seems awesome. That nice seems house, like an awesome... Magic.
Come on.
Yeah. you know, a lot of these characters I would definitely want to follow, and I think that's a good sign.
That is.
Yeah,
for
that's,
sure.
That's a film that... Even when the characters are kind of thinly drawn and not given enough screen time as you want to spend more time with them. And I think that's definitely a plus for this film.
That's something that we should like start discussing with every movie. Like, I'm thinking like Spider-Man Homecoming. Would I want to follow around most of those characters? Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to follow Ned. I want to follow Ned.
I feel like Ned would get real grating.
Maybe. We'll see.
I feel like Michelle would also like get kind of annoying after a while because she never seems to find any joy in anything.
We're not doing this, guys.
We're not having enough the gym teacher, though.
I definitely follow around Tombs as much as we do already, but
do it more. Anyway, so I think that's the end of our conversation about The Big Sick. In general, Bill and I, quite popular, but we also seem to have our agreements with Michael.
You're
this
quite
movie...
popular?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, we're quite popular.
Oh, we are? Yeah, Bill and me are quite popular.
Yes.
Quite positive, I should say. And in addition, but we all seem to think that, like, there could have been more. And I think that the hope is that a success of a film like this will give other creators the license to perhaps do more down the line.
Sure. I want a TV show, apparently. I guess that's what I want.
You want to go and watch Master of None. I want a movie that has a person from a Muslim background who is still a devout Muslim.
Sure.
Like, that's what I'm looking for. And then some people want to see brown men stop falling in love with white women.
But specifically about an immigrant. Like, there's plenty of movies in there, you know, in native countries where that subject is brought up.
Yeah. So that's that. For today, that's The Big Sick. Later on this weekend, we will be talking about War Apes, with a special guest. And Bill, you will not be able to participate in that, correct?
Yes.
All right. So everyone at home, say goodbye to Bill. He'll be back next week when we talk about, I guess, Dunkirk. Dunkirk is coming out next week. And then at some point, we want to talk about a ghost story.
A round table at some point?
Yeah, we'll try to do a round table. maybe we'll do that in the middle of this week, and then we'll just do Dunkirk only next weekend, and then the weekend to follow.
And Valerian. And
see, oh, fucking Valerian. Anyway.
You're not doing it, but me and Bill.
I'll tell you what. I have a final interview at a job next week, and if I get that job, I will go see Valerian.
Wait, that sounds like a terrible reward for you since you hate Luc Besson.
I'll have money. And God hates me, so he'll make me watch Valerian by giving me this job. That's the Irish Catholic in me talking. So yeah, we've got Dunkirk, Valerian, and a ghost story coming up, and then we'll do a roundtable too, maybe. Maybe this coming week, if we can all work it out. But anyway, that's it for today. We are brought to you again by MUBI, the online streaming cinema. You can get a free 30-day trial of MUBI by going to mubi.com/filmstage. And again, I've been watching a lot of streaming stuff recently, and Hulu, Netflix, Amazon all have terrible streaming apps. Like, just hard to find things, and like, you can't browse. But MUBI, because they have a limited selection, actually has a very clean, very nice looking app that gives you perfect scrollability, so you can check out all of the 30 films that they're showing at any given time and see which one tickles your fancy the most. So again, for a free 30-day trial, all you got to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage. In addition to that, don't forget to give to our Patreon. For as little as $1 an episode, you can be included in our patron subscribers only Slack channel. You can also get entered in to win fabulous prizes. And when we hit our goals, we will produce other episodes, classic movie reviews. If we get up high enough, we'll even do a full movie commentary that you can listen to as you watch the movie, which I can only imagine would be the greatest experience in many of our lives.
So we might owe a certain movie, too.
Anyway, so all you got to do is go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. And you can give your hard-earned ducats to us there. That is that for now. Guys, let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and 3 days from now, when Mike and I will be back to talk about War Apes. Bill Graham.
You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find me doing crazy stuff in the Slack channel and writing about movies all over the place.
All right, Michael Snydell.
You can find me on Twitter at @Snydell, where I will be doing magic tricks with dollar bills. And what else? Oh, my ghost story interview is up, so you can go read that. I'm pretty happy with it. Yeah. And I was, again, on the Elka Hollywood podcast. It will be up next Thursday, but go listen to their new episode, which is about a crazy Wes Craven movie called Rawhead Rex.
All right, and you can find out whether or not I get my new job and end up seeing Valerian on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. I'm also going to have some other big personal life oriented news coming out. Something that I may have mentioned on this podcast, but we're finally ready to like start announcing and prepping for real. So that's going to be cool. You can also find me writing at thefilmstage.com, my personal site, dearfilm.net. And you can see me going through just about every film that Christopher Nolan has ever created on Letterboxd. Just look for it at Brian J. Rowan. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. And tune in on Sunday when we will be talking about War of / For the Planet of the Apes.